This reading is called Song for Skip by James Baldwin. I hope I don't ruin everything by doing this. James Baldwin was an African-American writer, poet, activist, essayist. He was queer, he was out, he was loud, he was proud, he was angry, he was often an atheist, and sometimes not. And so I read you this poem. I believe, my brother, that some are haunted by a song all day and all the midnight long. I'm going to tell God how you treated me one of these days. Now, if that song tormented me, I could have no choice but be whiter than a bleaching bone. Of all the ways there are, this must be the most dreadful, to be alone. White rejects light while blackness drinks it in, becoming many colors, and stone holds heat while grass smothers and flowers die, and the sleeping snake is hacked to pieces while digesting, so to speak, his three martini lunch. Dread stalks our streets and our faces. Many races gather again to despise and disperse and destroy us, nor can they any longer pretend to be looking for a friend. That dream was sold when we were on the auction block of manifest destiny. Time is not money. Time is time. And the time has come again to outwit and outlast, survive and surmount the authors of the blasphemy of our chains. At least we know a man when we see one, a shackle when we wear one, or a chain when we bear one, a noose from a halter or a pit from an altar. We who have been blinded are not blind, and since when not to trust the mind? Time is not money. Time is time. You made the money. We made the rhyme. Our children are. Our children are. Our children are, which means that we must be the pillar of cloud by day and of fire by night, the guiding star. My beloved brother, I know your walk and love to hear you talk that talk while your furrowed brow grows young with wonder like a small boy staring at the thunder. I see you somehow about the age of 10, determined to enter the world of men, young yet not too far from your mother's lap, wearing your stunning baseball cap. Perhaps then, around 11, wondering what to take as given, and not much later going through the agony bequeathed to you. Then spun around, then going under the small boy staring at the thunder. Then take it all and use it well, this manhood, calculating through this hell. Who says better, who knows more than those who enter at that door, called back for black by Christians who raped your mother and then lynched you, seed from their loins, flesh of their flesh, bone of their bone. What an interesting way to be alone. Time is not money, time is time. And a man is a man, my brother, and a crime remains a crime. The time our fathers bought for us resides in a place no one can reach, except he be prepared to disintegrate himself into atoms, into smashed fragments of bleaching bone, which is indeed the great temptation beckoning this disastrous nation. It may indeed precisely be all that they claim as history. Those who required of us a song know that their hour is not long. Our children are the morning star. That is from a book called, what is the book called? It's right here. Jimmy's Blues and Other Poems. Thank you. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with horses. We are a reading family, and on our weekly trips to the library, I was limited by my parents to checking out only 10 books at a time. It was child abuse, mostly because I lost them under my bed. Every week, I made a beeline for what would now be called the teen and tween section, And I scanned the spines of the books for a sign that this book was meant for me. It wasn't a mysterious sign. It wasn't some kind of intuition or knowledge gifted by the universe. No. It was just a sticker on the spine of the book. It was a yellow sticker at my library with a tiny icon of a running horse outlined in brown, which the thoughtful librarians pasted onto each new horse book they received, knowing perfectly well that I, or someone much like me, would appreciate their thoughtfulness. Thank God, I thought, as I indiscriminately devoured every horse sticker book, someone understands that I need to be able to find myself in these shelves. The experience of being other is one into which we're constantly pushed. All of us, no matter how mainstream and white bread we might seem, we've all had the experience of being other. I was the horse girl. No, seriously, people at school called me that. And that was a way that I was other sometimes. Being the other is also something from which we recoil or retreat. Leaving aside philosophical musings on what the nature of the other is, for now, let's acknowledge that humans are tribal creatures. Our biological makeup is one that desires sameness, likeness, because those are safe. People who look like us, act like us, and think like us are our people. How many of us walk through those doors every week and think, oh, now I can relax. I'm among my people. I know I do. The deep programming in our brains knows from prehistoric times that family groups are the proper shape of things. And it takes recurring acts of imagination, courage, and vulnerability to expand our understanding of what a family group is and what it looks like when we are confronted with the other. There's a reason why almost everyone here looks familiar, and it's not just because some of us have been coming here for quite a long time, and some of us have only been coming here for a couple of months, but we're getting to know faces. It's because with all of our quirks and differences, we mostly know what to expect when we look around at a Unitarian Universalist congregation on a Sunday morning. You expect some geeky t-shirts. In the summer, you'll need some flip-flops and some sensible shoes in the winter. And if I, as the new kid on the block, ask who is in charge of some committee, and you told me the guy with the beard and the glasses, we are all doomed. But we're all here. We've made a commitment to something beyond ourselves. We've devoted ourselves to some degree or other to the act of imagination that says, people who don't look or think or act like me are not necessarily the other. That act of imagination is a leap of faith. It's a step on our journey as a faith community and for us as individuals within this community and out in the world. Philosopher and theologian John Caputo writes, this is a long quote, but it's a good one, "Over the ages, the spiritual masters have described spiritual life as a journey. Indeed, we might even venture the thought that to be religious, in its deepest sense, is to be a searcher, living in search of something, as opposed to being satisfied with the reality that sits under our noses, content with the present. When Bobby Kennedy used to say, there are those who look at things the way they are and ask why, I dream of things that never were and ask why not. He was speaking with a religious heart. Religious people are the people of the why not, the people of the promise, of the hope against hope. Now, I challenge Caputo's language here somewhat because I know perfectly well that non-religious people are also the people of the why not and the people of the promise, of the hope against hope. But whether you are a theist or an atheist, this is a place. It sounds like he's talking about Unitarian Universalists. To ask why not requires a lot of us. It requires that we empty ourselves out, that we intentionally pour out our expectations of what our tribe looks like, acts like, thinks like. It may be impossible to do. When we do it, we find it very difficult. Caputo, speaking of that internal conflict we may feel as we let go of our assumptions, wrote, "That sense of being lost, that I have in mind is confirmed by a simple test, a little imaginative experiment devised by Edmund Husserl, the father of phenomenology. And if you'd like to say that three times fast, I will give you a dollar. Simply ask yourselves what you would think and believe were you born there, were here for you made up of entirely different things, were you to wake up one morning and find yourself in a very different time and place. The most extreme example of this, Caputo tells us, is Gregor Samsa waking up as a cockroach in Kafka's The Metamorphoses. So imagine yourself speaking a very different language, reading very different books, having very different teachers, belonging to a very different culture. Would you still be you? How do you know who you are? Where do you begin and all the saturating influences of culture, all the saturating issues of culture and society, where do those end and we begin? Isn't the first step in self-knowledge, Caputo writes, to concede that we do not really know who we are? Back to me. I think kids are much better at this than adults. I had no problem believing myself to be not only a horse rider as a child, but a horse. A young girl with a bow in Narnia, or a teenage boy with a switchblade in The Outsiders. One of the reasons that I hate The Metamorphoses by Kafka is because I think I read it too young, and my imagination was too good. I could all too easily imagine every horrifying transformation in my mind, and thinking about that story still gives me chills. Kafka went way far down the road to the other with that one. Good writers can do that, and great writers will take us with them, as he did. As adults, it's more difficult for me and for us to be wholeheartedly entered into the space of the other. We learn that every person is, in some sense, the deepest sense, unreachable. They are impenetrable to us, and we in turn are unfathomable to them. It can be a lonely discovery, the slow or sudden understanding that we're alone in our heads, and no matter how we try, our tools for bridging the gap between thou and I will never be quite enough for complete understanding. But we keep trying, because that's what we do. We talk to one another, and we sing songs. We go in search of books that comfort us by telling us the stories of people like us or people like we want to be. Or we go in search of books that comfort us by telling us the stories that are different from us, different from what we want to be. Did you know that at the library, in the children's section, there are books featuring African-American children and families and characters, and these books have a sticker on their spine that says, Black? At first, I kind of wanted to burn all the things down when I thought about that, because this is 2020. And despite the garbage fire that is our current political situation in terms of social justice for marginalized bodies in America, I guess it does still surprise me that we haven't moved past the point of white people as default in terms of children's stories, among other things. I want to also note here, there is not a single Black person in America who is surprised by this. None. There's not one, and that's how I know this is my privilege speaking that I didn't notice before. But on the other hand, I think about how glad I was in 1982 to be able to find books with horses in them. And I think about some kiddo at the library sitting on the floor and scanning the spines of books and knowing that she can find herself in those books. She can find a family that looks like hers and experiences of life that reflect and represent her experience of life. And so I think Black Jesus and Buddha and St. Carrie Fisher, our patron lady of Jewish badasses and mental health, for representation in media, and the librarians who thought to put that sticker on the spine of that book. But I wonder, have they added more stickers? What stickers will they put on the books with lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender themes and characters? Will there be a little hijab or crescent and star on the book about the Muslim schoolgirl's experience in elementary school in Michigan? What will the spine of the book about Latinx families look like? Will the book be in the Spanish section? What about the second and third generation Latinx babies who don't speak Spanish but still have brown families and abuelas who talk at them in rapid fire Spanish? And I wonder even more, who will check these books out? What media is meant for me? And would I, as one white kid in a very diverse city, have run my finger over the spines of the books and skipped the rainbow sticker, the crescent moon and star sticker, the Mexican flag sticker, because those books weren't meant for me? I think I would have skipped right over them. Not out of malice or ill will. Let's just face it, I would just be looking for that horse sticker. But because I think I know who I am, and I think I know what I am not. And there's damn little reward or incitement for a child, much less an adult, to stray outside the comfortable bounds of those definitions. To empty ourselves and do what Caputo suggested, to concede that we do not, in fact, know who we are, unless we also confess that we define ourselves by who we are not. And even then, there's room for uncertainty. I would argue that this reveals the tension which threatens, particularly at this moment in history, to do our nation irreparable harm. There are so many others in the world, in our country, our neighborhoods right now. There are women and girls in hijab being harassed in shopping malls and having their head coverings yanked off by strangers. It's happened in Portland, New York, Chicago, and Richardson, Texas. There are preschool students being evacuated from their Jewish shuls because bomb threats keep being phoned in. There are Latinx kids who are translating for their parents at the grocery stores, being told by other customers that they'll be deported to the other side of a wall that may not be fully physical yet, but is sure as hell looming. Not to speak of those refugees in internment camps and the cynically calculated misery with which our government afflicts them. Our government, not somebody else's, ours. There are women who don't have health care who are being screamed at by anti-choice protesters as they scurry into Planned Parenthood clinics for breast cancer screenings. There are families and there are tribes who are wondering if their water supply will remain clean and watching bulldozers scour the land that they've held as sacred for generations. There are gay kids spending their afternoons at homeless shelters because they've been kicked out of their houses and they don't have anywhere else to go. There are black men being pulled over on their way to work because their cars are too nice and their skin is too dark. There are whole families whose visa applications and refugee status are being labeled terrorist for the crime of having existed in a war zone. There are so many others in the world today. And if you saw yourself or heard yourself or felt yourself in that incomplete list of others, well, good, because that is the act of imagination, of placing ourselves in the shoes of the other. And that is a way that we can begin to see ourselves as other and yet as together. Here's that little test again. Ask yourself what you would think and believe were you born there. Were here for you made up of entirely different things? Were you to wake up one fine day and find yourself in a very different time and place? Speaking a very different language, reading very different books, having different teachers, belonging to a very different culture, would you still be you? The other is not going away. The other will never go away. All the border walls and Muslim flight bans in the world will not change the fact that we spend our days surrounded by those who are other. We too are other to someone, unreachable, impenetrable, unfathomable. what? We're the people of faith. We are the people of why not? We are the people who come together at least once a week and spend some time on the journey of not only self-discovery, but selves discovery, all of ourselves. We imagine ourselves in a world in which our family tribe grows and grows and welcomes all the others who share our vision of compassion, inclusion, spiritual growth, inquiry, celebration, love, work, justice. Coming back again one last time to John Caputo, he reframes the problem of the other as a joy. It's not a bug, he insists, it's a feature. He writes, "The relation with the other person is a journey we never complete, where that incompleteness is not an imperfection, but testimony to the perfect excess of the other. It is not a loss, but a source of endless joy and discovery." And so we come together each week, looking and acting and thinking in particular Unitarian Universalist ways. We are men with glasses and women with glasses. We are women and men in flip-flops and Birkenstocks and sensible shoes. We're mostly white, mostly well-educated, mostly fairly secure economically, although even that is changing and being challenged. I see you. In some ways, we come here knowing what to expect. Every week, we will sing songs, folk songs or hymns where we've tailored the words for our own community. We'll share our joys and our sorrows. We'll talk about justice. Oh, yes, that's as predictable as anything in this Unitarian Universalist church. And usually, at some point, your minister will tell you or invite you or ask you to do something. Did you know it? Every week, somewhere along the path from thought to keyboard to iPad in my journey of crafting this reflection, I have to decide what I hope that you and I will take from the sermon, the reflection, the words. Luckily, there's a simple way to think of it, and it goes back to another common UU chalice lighting, one that I grew up with and that you've probably heard. We do it at another church that I grew up in with hand motions, and I can't do it without saying the hand motions, so you get to see this as well. We light this chalice to celebrate Unitarian Universalism. This is the church of the open mind. This is the church of the helping hands. This is the church of the loving heart. How many of you have heard or spoken those words? Yeah, okay, yeah, you know it. And every week when I'm writing, I think to myself, am I talking to my head or my hands or my heart? Every reflection hopefully talks to all three in some ways. Loving hearts without helping hands are pointless. Helping hands without open and hardworking minds are ineffective. But there's usually one aspect that I focus more that stands out. And please note also that I use helping hands strictly as a metaphor, since we all know that help is given and received in many, many ways, and not all of them need to involve hands. Imagination. Imagination, I think, is finally an act of the heart which engages the mind. And it requires that we take seriously not just the why, but also the why not. Why not imagine what it's like for that American Muslim woman in line in front of me at the grocery store? Why not imagine myself as a Latino man who carries my difference on my skin and in my voice? Why not imagine myself as that beautiful young girl bending to look at the books on the shelf and seeking to find herself within the narratives preserved there? So today, I invite you to join me in the act of imagining ourselves as other than what we are. Imagine yourself as different. Imagine that it's not scary. It's not frightening. It's not less than. Imagine that it's courageous and it's beautiful and it's not just more than. Imagine that it is instead part of, essential to, who you are and who we are. Imagine a family and a community, a city, a nation, where we respected everyone's autonomy and welcomed everyone's differences. Imagine that. Amen. And may it be so.